rationalizations. Here they are. I'm fighting fire with fire. Everybody else, it's a dumb rule. Ethical as long as it doesn't hurt anyone. I've got it coming. They owe me. I'm doing it for my family. It's for a good cause. I don't care what it looks like. I can still be objective. This is a business management or political issue. It doesn't involve ethics. To go along, get along. They don't understand all of these. Sometimes you have to take shortcuts to survive. You ever heard those? And that's how we justify our behavior. There's the doctrine of relative filth. That's about as low as you can get, I think, right there. But competence and diligence. Disciplinary Rule 101 provides that a lawyer should not agree to handle any matter beyond his or her level of competence. Well, that's pretty simple, isn't it? 101 says that a lawyer shall not neglect any matter or fail to complete all services owed to the client. And it defines neglect as inattentiveness involving a conscious disregard for the responsibilities owed. It's kind of like a conscience indifference. It's kind of reckless as much as it is negligence. In criminal appellate law, competence is usually assessed under Sixth Amendment ineffective assistance of counsel, and we know what the leading case was on that. Of course, it's Strickland versus Washington. And here are the issues. And it's real hard, you know, and I think any of you, I mean, most of you are appellate counsel. You know this, especially if you handle writs. It is really, really difficult to show somebody is ineffective under Strickland. First of all, you got to show that it was deficient. And they were so serious that they weren't functioning as Sixth Amendment counsel. And then secondly, it's not enough that it's deficient. It's got to show that it prejudiced the defense so much, really as a practical matter, that but for the lawyer's incompetence and negligence, the result of the trial would have been different. Or it was likely that it would be different. And that is difficult because quite often, you know, it's kind of like trying to heal a dead man when you're representing some of these folks, because before the state seeks the death penalty, quite often they got a slam dunk case. And, about the only thing good about your lawyer, your client is that he's a good shot or something like that. But really, it's kind of like my old mentor in the district attorney's office years ago used to say, even the best jockey can't win the Kentucky Derby riding on a mule. And you can't make up your facts. And you got to live with the facts that you have. And I have all the respect and admiration for you all that handle these, especially the capital cases on appeal that you're appointed to do, because the ones that I know that are appointed regularly are very, very good lawyers. And what you have to watch out for is, and I've got some examples of this, but the idea that the end justifies the means, and it doesn't. Because you really are bound by the canons of ethics, judges are, and by the code of discipline. I mean, code of conduct for lawyers, and every state has one. All right, but these are the requirements of Strickland. Now let's see here. I'm going to learn this one of these days. There we go. And here is 11071 provides for effective assistance of habeas counsel in capital cases, even though the Sixth Amendment doesn't require it. And capital habeas counsel should be aware of 11071's pleading requirements and substandard filings, and failure to meet filing deadlines demonstrate incompetence and neglect. Here's Ex parte Medina. Many of you may be familiar with this, and it's a good, capable lawyer that did this, but habeas counsel waited until the last possible date to intentionally file a bare bones habeas application with absolutely no facts alleged that would entitle the client to relief. And it was without his client's consent on top of all the rest of it. So now you've got to about strike four, and said that his reason for doing so was to provoke a dispute in the convicting court as to the level of pleading specificity required by 11071. And this earned him a referral to the disciplinary council. But if you think this was bad, this is on the merits. This is the trial lawyer. At the close of the state's case, trial counsel demanded a 3-month continuance, and the trial judge refused the demand. And so then she refused to put on any evidence whatsoever and intentionally torpedoed his punishment hearing in front of the jury. And a few of her statements to the judge: we can try this case again in 10 years. I don't care if I lose my license over this. You talk about the end justifying the means. And she didn't inform the defendant of her scheme, just said, trust me, earned a referral to disciplinary counsel, and stay tuned. I don't know, you know, and this really tells you that quite often